A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare Short-Term Insurance Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The biggest convention of its kind ever in the UK, Wrestling MediaCon 2018, is heading to Manchester on the 8th and 9th of September. Wrestling MediaCon 2018 will feature live wrestling shows from Revolution Pro and Impact Wrestling, meet and greet with all the talent, panel discussions from the likes of Inside the Ropes, and workshops on how to get into the world of professional wrestling from former WWE writers and bookers. There will also be guest matches from Defiant, NGW, and an NWA World's title defense by Nick Aldis, taped for £10 of gold. Other names announced for Wrestling MediaCon 2018 include The Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer, Colt Cabana, Sean Waltman, Cultaholic, Botchamania, myself and Ollie from The Wrestle Ramble, and many more to be announced. Wrestling MediaCon comes to the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England on the 8th and 9th of September. Tickets are available now from WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, SWAF Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis, on the eve before your big birthday.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I turn 30 tomorrow.
30 tomorrow, man. Are you excited?
I am. It's a mixture of, you know what? I don't know. It's just so much expectation. A lot of my friends have turned 30 this year, and they've all said the same thing, which is, it's such a big thing in everyone else's minds. So there's this inflated sense of pressure that you have to do something. And it's just making me anxious. Like, is the, you know, what's going to be done? Like, do I have to arrange drinks? I've kind of made a half-assed attempt at arranging drinks. I'd rather it just not happen.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm sort of the same way. Like, I didn't do anything for my 30th, but I wasn't in the country on my 30th. I was in New York. I was in New York in Manhattan. Mm. No, I wasn't. I was in Hell's Kitchen. Best place on earth. But, so yeah, I've never really subscribed to that. I don't have enough friends to really invite out for drinks and stuff like that. That's why I've kind of latched on to all of my wife's friends.
Nice. Well, you can latch on to my friends.
I'm going to latch on. Your friends very much like me, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah. You're all right. Yeah, it was fine.
It was fine.
You were fine.
But yeah, we went out last night.
For your wife's 30th. We're very close in birthdays.
Exactly. And it's funny.
Well, my 2 days apart.
My wife and I were talking about her turning 30. And quite a few of our friends are turning 30 this year. Obviously, I turned 30 a couple of years ago. And so I was like, it feels kind of nice because I've always felt myself as like, I'm just the owl fella that's within this group because they're all in their 20s. Mm. But now, a lot of them are joining me in their 30s. I don't feel quite as old as anymore.
Like, yeah.
It's a psychological thing, but I don't feel as old, older than they are.
So before you were like, oh, I'm such a pimp daddy with my young 20-year-old wife.
And it's like, oh, now, she's
over the hill.
Oh, she's in her 30s there. Everything's going downhill from here, mate. Oh, God. But yeah, we went out to a Mexican restaurant down close to Warren Street.
Yes.
And it was wonderful. There was 21 people there. It was absolutely nuts. Like, this big long table with 21 people. You were there with your lady partner. My sister-in-law was there. A lot of our friends were there. And we had a bloody wonderful evening. But do you want to talk about the little surprise?
Yes. So I don't think I've talked to you about my reaction to this yet, have I?
No.
So because, all right, so this was all for Luke's wife's birthday. And, you know, the music starts playing, and I'm like, oh, here we go,
like
come on.
Like big mariachi music.
And I'm like, because this is what in the Mexican restaurants at home, this is what happens. Music happens, and everyone sings a song. And all of a sudden, a shot glass is placed in front of me. I'm like, Okay, we've all got to do shots then. Okay. All right, well, fine. Let's do this. And then this large hat gets really heavy, large hat gets placed on my head. I'm thinking, looks like they're going all out. I mean, everyone's going to have to wear these hats. It did not click with me that this was also going to involve me. And it, I looked around and I was like, why hasn't anyone else got hats? And I was halfway through that and my girlfriend was smiling and I was like, okay.
Yep.
It's a thing.
It's a birthday thing.
It's a birthday thing.
Because my wife got the same thing because like she had a balloon on her chair that said 30th. So I grabbed the manager and I was like, oh, because I'd seen this happen already earlier in the night for someone else's before you'd arrived.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I can get them to do that for Hansel. And so like it did this and I went to the manager. I was like, oh, can we do something for my wife? And she was like, yes, we'll arrange something special. I was like, also, that chap over there, it's his birthday on Thursday. And she was like, oh, we'll do something for him as well.
Well, that's very kind of you. It was nice.
Yeah, you got to drink some tequila. Was it tequila?
Yes, and it was, you know, usually tequila is quite an off-putting taste, but I imagine that's because I've only drank tequila from the bottom shelf of Asda.
Yes.
So this was a much nicer form of tequila. Apparently tequila's the spirit to drink if you want to avoid a hangover.
Really?
Very low in sugar. And that's the apparently that's one of the components that creates a bad hangover.
I've only really had tequila once in my life, like a heavy night session of it playing Mario Kart, mm-hmm. and it was a case of like if you swore you had to do tequila.
Wow.
Went through quite a lot of tequila that night because the more you drink, the more sweary you get. So that's just, you just fall down a big rabbit hole of swear words
you've
after
gotta,
a while.
You can that is drinking game 101. If you can't go through a night without swearing,
yeah,
you haven't.
No, you haven't lived,
that's,
mate.
That's easy. You know, like, I can automatically just go into a mode. I'm not saying your name. I'm not pointing at anyone. I'm drinking with my left hand.
Yeah, well,
you need to be schooled, son.
Well, and I was very swear. I was a student as well.
Oh.
And we were playing Mario Kart 64, and I started swearing quite a bit. And I was violently ill from all of the tequila that I drank. And I don't think I've ever touched it since.
Oh, wow, it's one of those. So you just smell it and you get a flashback of that time.
I don't know if it's like a case of if I smell it, I would get that. It was just a case of that someone has offered it to me and I'm like, no, I'm good, thanks. Mm. I'm quite all right. Like, I don't need that ever again. It's the same with gin. I remember gin being quite lovely. Problem is I went far too heavy on it the first time I ever had it and I was very, very ill around a friend's house. And ever since then, I'm like, I just don't think I'll ever drink gin again because it made me very bad. So I tend to steer clear of all spirits.
Okay.
I just have beer. I'm safe with beer.
Just
I know
a
where
bloody lad.
I'm such a bloody lad. Well, that and wine. I know where I am with beer and wine as long as I don't have too much of the latter. And you know, I know where I am with it. I know what my limits are. Well, since I'm in spirits, it's all like, I could go a bit doolally.
Mm.
Like, it's only until like very recently that I've started re-drinking vodka again because my wife loves vodka so much. But all I can have are the flavoured vodkas. So like you can get vanilla flavoured vodka. So you do that with some Diet Coke. All of a sudden you've got a naughty vanilla Coke on your hands. And that's my scene.
That sounds lovely.
It is.
Just before we jump into the main show, I think I told you last night, but I could be quite a happy boy come tomorrow.
Yes,
in terms
yeah,
of birth.
Yeah, yeah.
Look how excited you got.
I forgot about this because you, someone say you might want to switch your working days.
Yes, so usually the birthday present allowance in my family is small. Like, Christmas is where we explode, really, in present giving. But birthdays, not so much. However, I thought, this is my mum keeps on texting me, what do you want for your birthday? What do you want? I'm like, oh, God, leave me alone, mum. Leave me alone. I'll let you know.
Slamming doors.
Yeah, it's been like that for a month. She's constantly texting. Like, what a lovely human being she is. I don't know why it gets to me. Smothering me with her affection. And I felt like, I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I want for my birthday. And
I've already got an eye kettle.
Exactly. And my lady partner said, well, you know, you really enjoyed the Switch when you went round your friend's house to play the other day. And I was like, oh my God, you've just unlocked the door that I had closed on my N64 days and GameCube days as a teenager. I loved Super Mario and Zelda and Mario Kart and all of that because I was a Nintendo kid.
Mm.
And I was like, yes, I do want that. So I So I made a punt. I didn't know how expensive they are.
Yeah.
£280 for the console.
Oh, I know. I know. This is why I don't have one.
So I thought, you know what? I only get 130th. I'm gonna punt it. Text my mum. A Nintendo Switch would be great. I know it's really expensive. Just let me know if that's too much, and I'll find something else. Honestly, don't push yourself if that's too much. She just sent back a kiss.
Well, I mean, that seems like sometimes in contracts, if you just put an X down,
you've signed
a contract. Yes. So it might either be a kiss, or she's just X'd a contract.
Yeah.
So a verbal. Well, actually, no, it's a written contract, really, because it's in text format.
That's going to be awkward when I have to legally take my parents to court when they don't get me the Switch. Well, you did sign it via WhatsApp.
Exactly.
Be like a Gary Coleman? Was that what? The short guy from Different Strokes?
I don't know who Gary Coleman is.
Yeah, he took his parents to court.
Oh, yeah, that's right, he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, I did do that.
Yeah, sure. I remember. I really want a Switch because my friend Mason's got a Switch and I was playing, Mario Odyssey on it, and I was like, this is so cool. And then all I can think of was like, man, I have a 3-hour commute every day.
Be perfect.
Every day I'm on the tube for 3 hours to get into the studio. So, having a Switch would be so cool because I can play Mario and I can play Zelda on the way here. I can download Sonic Mania and I can just play those. I can have so much free time to do it because by the time I get home, my wife's there. As soon as I put the PlayStation on, she's like, oh no, we need to watch. Like, let's do something else. And I don't get gaming time anymore. So, having the Switch, it just seems like a smart thing. And I keep saying this to my wife, as if you're like, well, it just makes sense though, doesn't it? Like, surely, this just makes perfect sense. And
it's an investment in your time.
Exactly. And then I can go to Mason's house and we can play Mario Kart together. Mm. And when my friend's wedding a couple of weeks ago, his brother and his girlfriend, they've got Switches. And they were like, oh, we're going to organise Switch parties. And I'm like, oh,
that sounds like a sexy thing.
I can't go to a Switch party because I don't have a Switch.
Isn't a Switch another name for a sort of whip with a thing at the end of it? You know, you get a Switch and you would spank someone with it.
I'm just
saying, just in case you agree, you turn up with your Nintendo Switch to a very different kind of
party. Was that back in your porn looking days that you were sort of explaining last night?
It was back in some days. let's get on with the show. And we're kicking off by talking about one of the best segments of the week, I would argue, and that is Daniel Bryan's promo segment in front of the live crowd, where he booked the match against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, where he'll be teaming with the currently out with injury with, I'm going to say it, diverticulitis.
Which I butchered on yesterday's news because I misconstrued it as something to do with colitis, which is a sort of a colon-based disease. And so I put more emphasis on that part of it. But yeah, diverticulitis.
Not far off. It is the small intestine,
yes.
I believe.
Yeah.
So just a little bit further along.
I knew I should have called me mum. My mum, a former nurse, I knew, and she'd have told me. She just said, no, you idiot. You're such an idiot. Why are you a son of mine? It's this, you idiot.
Diverticulitis.
Yeah.
It's quite fun to say. It's quite a percussive word.
Especially because, like, although I butchered saying it in yesterday's news, I actually butchered it just trying to say the butchered version of it, which our editor had to work around, bless his heart.
Divercolitis. is that what you were trying to
say? I was saying divercolitis. Or I can't remember what I was saying now. But it
sounds like a swimming scuba disease you get. So, yes, he booked this match, and he said in so doing, I'm sick of all the red tape. I don't want to fill out forms, all these admin sides of the general manager role. I don't like wearing blazers.
He was very upset about the blazer. Whatever this is, he said as he took it off and
or
threw it on
cardigan.
The ground.
Yes,
yeah, lovely.
Said it twice. and I thought that to me seemed like impro on the spot.
Yeah.
And because he called back. You can't write that. No one thinks to write that. That's Daniel Bryan improvising. And the way that he back-referenced it by bringing it up again when he's talking about when he takes off the cardigan blazer, whatever this thing is, and throws it on the floor, Ric Flair style, should have elbow-dropped it. What a great promo he is.
Oh, and it's so great to just have him back in this role. And but yeah, I mean, I think he most likely is stepping down as general manager. But before we get to that, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, what are your feelings? And I sort of talk about this a little bit in my SmackDown review. What are your feelings on no selling the beatdown last week.
Yes. Oh, look at my bottom note here. Would have liked him selling injuries from last week more.
Yeah.
Because he took a pop-up powerbomb on the ring apron, which we've been conditioned, well, not so much nowadays, but at least at the start, in the pure form of that move, that would write you off TV for a month.
Yeah, as I said in the SmackDown review, the problem is this match was only really sorted out 7 days ago, so got to be a bit snappy with this build. So,
but there's no harm coming out with a limp, maybe a bandaged area.
And if you are going to say, you know, we need to try and move this feud along a little bit because we've only got 14 days to build it, don't do that beatdown angle then. Like, do a beatdown angle in the ring, just don't do the pop-up powerbomb on the ring. Just do a regular beatdown and leave him laying. Maybe put him through a table, which we're conditioned to know is like, oh, that's bad, but something you can easily get up from.
I like the beatdown on retrospect. You know, if we had a lot more time, I think you should have announced it. Then the following week had the beatdown. You could string this out for months.
Absolutely, yeah. But in like within, if you only have 14 days, then you don't do that pop-up. You just do a... But like, I loved that angle, but I'd have loved that angle if it happened 2 months ago.
I wouldn't scrap the pop-up powerbomb. I would just make him sell more this week.
Okay, yeah.
Especially because you're heading into WrestleMania. You want him to seem like even more of an underdog. This is Shane McMahon, who's, you know, he can beat anyone, but he's not actually a wrestler.
He can out-wrestle AJ Styles,
and
mate.
He's injured. And a Daniel Bryan, who's just coming back, and he's injured against the dastardly force of Owens and Zayn.
Yeah.
I like that narrative more. But to have him just come out, not selling anything really, was a mistake. But everything else I thought was exemplary. I thought, Bryan is such a good promo. And by the end of it, he said, I'm going to kick their ass. Which, in isolation, is a pretty standard line. Loads of people say, I'm going to kick your ass at this match, probably at Backlash.
Yep.
But when Bryan said it, I was like, I felt like I was watching I was a teenager again, watching my friend shouting at a kid from across the road, like, I'm going to kick your ass. And I believed him.
Yeah.
I was like, he's my friend. And I want to see you kick that guy's ass.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so
he's very
love this
good.
Segment.
Yeah, he is very, very good. I'm so happy to see Daniel Bryan back. And the Wrestling Observer were reporting last week that he is going back as a full-time, doing big air quotes for podcast listeners, wrestler. Not sure of his schedule, saying it correctly. It's Dave Meltzer was speculating that it's most likely going to be like Randy Orton's schedule, which is mostly full-time, but he doesn't have to do all the house shows. So you just do limited house show dates, but you're at TV, you know, three times out of the four per month. So, and that would be really great to have him back, which means we are likely going to see Daniel Bryan stepping down as SmackDown General Manager following WrestleMania 34.
Yeah, not having to wear whatever that is
whatever
anymore.
Whatever that is. He's got new T-shirts that he needs to sell, so we're just going to be wearing those instead.
Probably, if going by his track record, horrible T-shirts. Like, do you remember that cap with the beard on the front? What the hell was that?
That he has had some disastrous T-shirts over the years. Poor old Daniel Bryan.
But after having 3 years of no Daniel Bryan wrestling in the ring, I want him to be a week-to-week character.
Yeah.
I would be really, really sad to see him only at the big pay-per-views and doing a program every couple of months.
Yeah.
And I know that's selfish of me. Daniel Bryan wrestling is better than none at all, but I'm greedy and I love the guy. And watching him in this capacity, just it's reignited something else in me.
Yeah.
You know, because this was Bryan and Punk were that era where I was really, really super into wrestling before I started doing this job, before I became a cynical wrestling news and like picking apart everything. So Bryan really is a portal to a simpler time of wrestling fandom for
me. Yeah, absolutely. But the question, I suppose, if Bryan is stepping down as SmackDown General Manager after WrestleMania, and let's not forget that 2 weeks ago Shane McMahon said that he was stepping down as Commissioner, are we going to have a complete overhaul of the power play on SmackDown Live? We're not going to have Shane and Bryan in charge anymore. We're going to have maybe two new characters step in to those roles. Like, who could they possibly be?
Step up, maybe. I would like a Drake Maverick.
I was just going to think of the exact same thing.
Drake Maverick.
Because he's already there anyway, because he's got to tape 205 Live. So
Save on travel costs.
Exactly. And I think that giving Spud that role would be really great. Like, I'd love it to be Drake Maverick. He was the first person that popped into my head. But Mike Johnson of PW Insider
speculated it's important to
say. Didn't report, he speculated, like, well, this could be one option, but a lot of people have taken that to be like, hey, this might be happening, that it could be Hulk Hogan, because Hogan, like, WWE have admitted, they have, you know, said, we are in talks with Hogan, but nothing has been confirmed yet. And Johnson has speculated that, hey, like, he could go in for the SmackDown Live general manager role now that Daniel Bryan is stepping down.
Have you got any interest in seeing Hulk Hogan? Oh, you just bumped the mug, your retro wrestle talk mug on the microphone.
I did, and that was disastrous as
maybe
well.
Coming soon to a stockist. Aren't these beautiful?
To answer your question, am I interested in seeing Hulk Hogan as the general manager of SmackDown Live? Not really, no.
Because
it's Hulk Hogan. It just seems really weird just like to have him coming out on TV every week going like, brother, here's the matches tonight, brother. Yeah. I don't know if I can buy him as a general manager.
That's it. There's an authenticity. It's like putting to one side all of the controversy, which is definitely significant and a huge issue in itself. Just Hulk Hogan, he's going to get a pop. Well, he probably won't even get a pop given that all that other stuff. But he, I don't really want to see him at the top in the Kurt Angle role with the bad dialogue and the fumbling through scripted promos.
And he will fumble through scripted
and
promos.
And having to recap what happened the previous week at the start of every episode. I haven't really got any interest. Plus, Hulk Hogan has never been one. He's never gotten out of that Hulk Hogan 80s delivery. Yeah. Even when he's meant to be realistic in the NWO in the 90s, he's still Hulk Hogan from the 80s. I don't really... It'll make it too much about him, and he can't wrestle a match.
Yeah, I'd rather it not be Hogan, but I like the idea of it being Drake Maverick. If Shane is staying in, like, so maybe Shane and Drake Maverick kind of run the show, but if Shane is stepping down indefinitely as well, I mean, it's also how serious this diverticulitis is, because it is a very serious thing to happen to someone. By all accounts, he's wrestling, but like, what impact will that have after that? You know, it's that McMahon wrestling thing. It's just like, oh, I'll be fine. I'll just wrestle this, and then I'll get it sorted out later. But by taking all the bumps and everything, you kind of just sort of make things worse. So it'll be interesting to see what happens after WrestleMania.
Are you saying Shane McMahon takes unnecessary risks?
Oh, I mean, I would never say such a thing like that, but maybe, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I don't know what I really want to happen. I wouldn't... Maybe William Regal could be a good...
Yeah?
A good presence.
Chilly Willy Regal. A British influence in this. You got Chilly Willy Regal and Drake Maverick as the two Brits running the show.
I don't like two authority figures. I think it is very unnecessary. We've had it for a long time with the friction... Just have the one, if at all. Like, do we really need them on screen every week?
No.
Playing the catch up, playing the role of the voiceover guy in the promo packages, or I don't know what I want really.
No.
I definitely don't want them to overbear that much on the show though.
Yeah.
I would like it to be a wrestler show. I want a nice way to differentiate Raw and SmackDown maybe.
Well, that could always be doing. That would really help us when it comes to Survivor Series, when we do get the one night of the year that Raw and SmackDown starts go head to head in direct competition.
But the rest of the promo in Daniel Bryan's segment here, he did book Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus himself and Shane McMahon with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn's jobs on the line.
Yes, so if they lose, they remain fired. If they win, they'll be reinstated back to SmackDown Live. Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer has speculated, again, this is speculation, that Owens and Zayn could lose and then get drafted to Raw, which I think you and I have talked about previously. And they kind of teased that last year as well, didn't they, with the Survivor Series
talking
angle.
To Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, about possibly going back. So there's options there, but it's one of those matches where I'm not sure which direction it could go, because Kevin and Sammy could win and stay on SmackDown Live, but the other side of that is, do you want Daniel Bryan losing his first match back in 3 years? Surely you want that moment at the end with Daniel Bryan getting the pinfall victory over one of the over Kevin or Sammy.
Sure. And yeah, like you said, KO and Sammy can move to Raw. They're already wearing a lot of red in their gear. I feel like that's definitely significant. But I would, Bryan maybe put in a different GM that he can feud with. Maybe make Triple H GM of SmackDown.
Reignite that feud again.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Which I did like.
I loved it.
Oh, yeah, good. I thought you were being sarcastic.
I mean, no, no, I mean, yeah, it was fine, like it, no, sorry. not in that Luke's sense of it was fine. Not in that sense that it was fine. It was really good, aside from the fact that it was intended to end with Daniel Bryan not getting anywhere and just being pushed further down the card. It ended up being good because we got the WrestleMania 30 moment, but that was never the intended plan. It was meant to just be, yeah, you just get pushed down the card, you literally are a B-plus player, and we are just going to bury you further down here because we want to do Randy Orton versus Batista at WrestleMania because that's a much bigger match.
Well, hopefully that won't happen this time.
Well, you'd think it wouldn't happen again. The Wrestle Ramble will be right back after these short messages. This podcast is brought to you in part by Patreon. For just $5 a month, you'll get access to the Wrestle Ramble Extra, a monthly podcast where Ollie and I review shows from wrestling's past. If you pledge now, you'll get our back catalogue of episodes, including Money in the Bank 2011, Armageddon 2000, Wrestle Kingdom 10, and No Way Out 2004, and many others, as well as this month's episode, which will be WrestleMania 25. And $10 plus backers will become part of the Ramble Club, our new show where we talk about wrestling from around the world, including reviews of the Golden Lovers versus Cody and Marty Scurll, Austin Aries versus Eli Drake, and many, many more. All that and so much extra, so head over to patreon.com/wrestletalk for more information.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a SmackDown review, Maggle, I love it. We got us a flying Uso.
After a very lovely recapping video package of Daniel Bryan's coming out of retirement the previous week, we got Bobby Roode and Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal and who we thought was going to be Sunil Singh, but was switched out because he was injured after last week's RKO or something, whatever happened, with Rusev.
We got Rusev Day.
Yeah, to a huge pop.
Because he's the biggest heel on the card, obviously, so he has to come out as a heel.
Mm.
Well, to the biggest babyface pop.
I'm not against how they positioned Rusev as a heel face thing here. I don't mind it at all, especially given the backstage segment after this. But seeing Rusev Day come out with Aiden English and the crowd really react to him, all of a sudden, I was like, I'm interested in the US title feud. And I thought Jinder was really good here. Jinder's been sort of overshadowed by Rusev's inclusion. But when he said, he had this wonderful line about, you'll get to feel the wrath of the tiger soon, referring to Sunil Singh. He's just got the, Jinder's got a really good comedic heel face.
Yeah.
Which was never really utilised when he was in his WWE Championship role, because he couldn't show any comedy because he had to be taken seriously. But now he's at a better level. And when, but he says, but now we've got a lion, and Rusev came out. Of course, this is a reunion of a 2017 faction, like a 6 week lived long lived thing.
And it was so funny as well, because like I remember at the time when Rusev and Jinder just started randomly becoming a tag team, everyone, like a lot of wrestling journalists, were like, oh, what a burial of Rusev. Because they're just sticking him with this complete jabroni, this absolute jobber. And it's not elevating Jinder, it's just bringing Rusev down. Who'd have thought, like, a year later, one half of that team would be the WWE champion, and it wasn't Rusev. So, yeah, we got a reunion of that. And then, actually, this, not only where Rusev made me more interested in the United States title picture, made me a little bit more interested in this match, because
yes,
I like seeing Rusev work, and I really like Bobby Roode. Randy Orton I'm a bit touch and go with, but I don't mind Jinder either. So it got me a little bit more interested, and it suddenly made me think, as soon as he came out, I was like, cool, it's got to be a Fatal 4-Way at WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, same. And that's exactly what happened.
Especially when he scored the pinfall. When Rusev pinned Randy Orton, I was like, it has to be a Fatal 4-Way now. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's not a Fatal 4-Way and it remains a triple threat, then this company is absolutely clueless. But credit where credit's due, they put him in the right place.
Yeah, in the backstage segment afterwards, Jinder came up and was like, you know what, thank you, Rusev. I'm going to give you front row tickets to WrestleMania so you can watch the triple threat match.
Such a good
and
line.
Rusev, in a babyface way, was like, oh, no, I just pinned the US championship. The US champion, mate. I'm going to get added to this match.
Yeah.
And he goes off, and that's made official later.
Yeah.
Really nice logic. And when Rusev walked off, Sunil Singh ripped off his neck brace to reveal that injury was a work and threw it down on the ground in frustration.
So all of Jinder's plan has completely backfired on him. Pretty good stuff. Match was long as well.
Like, went through two ad breaks.
Two ad breaks. I think by the time it all was said and done, by the time the pinfall accounted, the show was about half an hour old. Because you had a really long intro package, then you had a lot of entrances. I think the first bell rang at about 12, 13 minutes into the show. So yeah, it was a long, long match. But I didn't think it was a particularly interesting match. It was very much just like the heels work down Randy. Randy gets the hot tag to Bubbles. Bubbles makes a comeback. Heels cut him off. Work over Bubbles, and then Bubbles gets the hot tag to Randy.
I disagree. I quite liked the match. They told, obviously, there was the heels versus face dynamic, but there was also dissension within the faces. Randy Orton kept on tagging himself in or kind of just doing bits outside to distract from his tag team partner, Roode. I really liked Randy Orton on the outside. Some of his facials. Of course he destroyed a Singh brother when he threw Sunil into the barricade.
It wasn't a table close enough
him. Wrong side of the ring. But yeah, I thought that there was one in particular when Rusev was walking around and it just showed a close-up of Randy's face, just like this sarcastic smile looking at him. I thought, that's the Randy Orton I want to see.
My favourite bit of this match, actually, was when the heels were getting the heat on Bobby Roode. And Randy was just very slow at possibly getting in the ring to break up a move, or just being like, I could go, but I'm not really going to. Because to him, just winning the match wasn't as important. It's just like, if his opponents get, like, you know, worked down, but going into WrestleMania, that puts his chances much higher.
This sort of sums up this episode of SmackDown and how it is different to Raw, in that we're 2 weeks out from WrestleMania here. SmackDown, in this segment, and I would argue pretty much all the others, effectively built, didn't do anything spectacular, but very effectively built WrestleMania matches.
Ooh, presumably interesting.
Presumably saving all the big angles for next week's Go Home show, whereas Raw did, like, just plodded along.
See, it's so interesting because I actually feel that this was exactly the same as Raw. We're 2 weeks out from WrestleMania. We've got to save all of our good stuff for next week for the Go Home show. But by doing that, this week felt like there was nothing of note about this. Like, as I was writing my recap of the show for the SmackDown review, I was just like, okay, this match happened, and then, you know, we moved on. And then this match happened, and then we moved on. And then this match happened, and then we moved on. Like, it didn't really feel that there was anything... Like, this, aside from Rusev getting put into this match, nothing about this feud was built further than it was the previous week.
Yeah, it was. You had Rusev added. That's a huge part of it.
But that also feels like it was a very last-minute decision to add Rusev into this match.
It does, but it's definitely for the better. I thought the main event angle was superb.
That was good.
Daniel Bryan announced the match with a great promo, and we got the tag team three-way confirmed.
Yeah, but the tag team three-way was more or less confirmed 2 weeks ago.
But I think to say it's not noteworthy is disingenuous there.
No, I think all the stuff that we thought was going into this, aside from Rusev, we more or less knew a couple of weeks ago. I felt that there was nothing in the matches, there was nothing really, like, you know, the following match, there's nothing really noteworthy about that. Well, actually, there was one noteworthy thing about it, but we'll come on to that a little bit later on. But I will say that I really did like the closing angle with AJ and Nakamura.
Cool. Well, I'm going to keep track of this as we go through then. So, first segment, noteworthy thing with Rusev being added to the four-way.
Yes, but the match itself was fine.
Noteworthy. Next up, we had AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura backstage. Nakamura said, "I want you in my corner tonight, AJ, for my match against Shelton Benjamin." And God, there's a match I didn't know I wanted.
Oh, well,
talk
good,
about
yeah.
left field.
Yeah, yeah, tell me about it.
When they announced Nakamura, I mean, like, at the start, when they ran through the card, I was like, I'm looking forward to all these matches. Bludgeon Brothers versus New Day, Nakamura versus Benjamin. I was in a good mood for this SmackDown episode. Maybe it's more me than the...
You had that lie-in.
I did have a big lie-in.
That's what helped,
mate. Because it was Luke's wife's birthday dinner last night. It
certainly was.
And I just wanted to sleep forever afterwards. Too much Mexican food.
I've actually written here that, like, Nakamura wants AJ in his corner as them. They both want each other at their best for their WrestleMania match. But my overarching question about this is, like, why hasn't the build for this match been more exciting?
Mm-hmm.
The build for Nakamura versus AJ Styles has been just at first gear since Nakamura won the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Fastlane was a bit of a hindrance to that because you had to get the AJ Styles winning the six-pack challenge to confirm that we were getting this match at WrestleMania. But, like, it just feels that this match is exactly... We're in the same point when Nakamura said, "I challenge AJ Styles," to where we are 2 weeks out from WrestleMania. Compare that to, say, for example, like, I just wish they would have done what they've done with the Triple H and Ronda Rousey feud on Raw, where you do these sit-down interviews and these promo packages and these video packages, kind of highlighting the great stuff that AJ has done, the great stuff that Nakamura has done, kind of highlighting his New Japan run, highlighting the stuff he did in NXT, all the stuff that AJ Styles has done around the world, and these two are finally going to collide on a WWE stage in front of 80,000 people. But that's not been it. It's just been... these two lads have sometimes seen each other backstage, and Nakamura said, "I'm going to win."
Yeah.
And it's just been a really uninteresting build to a match I'm really excited about.
I agree. The best thing that's happened in the entire feud was the end of tonight's show, or last night's show. But yeah, it's never progressed, exactly like you said, beyond the first gear of need to face.
Yeah.
It's just been that. But I thought by the end of this show, they'd done enough to make me renewed and interested into it. So then we had Becky Lynch versus Ruby Wright, or beating Ruby Wright. What was your problem here? Was this?
I've written here. It feels like this match was in slow motion, and it was a match.
There was a cool bit where Ruby Wright went for the pin, and Becky Lynch kind of Matrix lifted herself up. I'm sure someone wants to GIF that for me. This motion here,
and it was just. You know, it was just there. It was there to advertise the fact that we got the Women's Battle Royal at WrestleMania, because the Riot Squad then, the rest of the Riot Squad got in, and she threw them over the top rope because, hey, guess what? The Riot Squad suck and no one really cares about them.
Yeah, so it is over the top rope. We're not talking Miss WrestleMania rules, where it's any way out the ring.
Yeah, or is that Gail Kim on that Battle Royal they had on Raw, which, were, like, in the old days, it was just like, you just go in, if you go under the bottom rope, you're eliminated. And Gail Kim essentially just got out the ring and just eliminated herself.
And then walked out the company.
And just walked out the company back to TNA, where she really belongs.
That is badass, isn't it? We don't give Gail Kim enough credit for being that cool. So I didn't mind the match at all. I like Becky. I like Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how strong Becky Lynch looked coming out of it. I felt like, you know, we can't do any deep character or storyline stuff here because it's just going into a multi-person match with the Women's Battle Royal. But for the Women's Battle Royal, I felt like they built Becky up as a genuine contender there. It's a shame her tights are so off-putting.
Yeah.
What is that? Well, swimsuit little, flames?
Yeah, her Seth Rollins cosplay. Mm. It's not great. But yeah, I mean, the match did very little for me. I feel like I'm being a negative Nancy today.
I'm being a negative Nigel,
and I don't like being a negative Nigel.
It's because you didn't have a lion.
I did not have a lion. I had to get up and take the bins out this morning. I don't think that put too much of a damper on me watching this experience. I just feel like it was fine.
I do feel like people are going to start
saying... Oh, people will totally say I'm...
Ollie and Luke must decide what side of the argument they're going to take before these shows, right? We don't. We just come in here. And maybe it's an automatic thing.
Yeah. Maybe it is.
So then we had a Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable words promo with words on the screen. That's back again in full force.
It's never left us.
Which transitioned handily into the New Day's entrance with more words on the screen.
Yeah. So we had the Daniel Bryan segment, and then we had the New Day versus the Bludgeon Brothers. A match I was really, really getting... I was really excited for. Match started in the commercial break, and then... although they cut a promo beforehand, they said they had a plan to go to WrestleMania. Mm. But their road to WrestleMania was littered with trash, and that trash was big and smelly and hairy, and it was the Bludgeon Brothers. And then they had this match, mostly starting the commercial break. The Usos ran down, and there was a DQ.
I was going to say, my favourite bit about the New Day promo, every time they said WrestleMania, all three of them pointed to the WrestleMania sign.
Yeah, nice touch.
I very much enjoyed that.
I don't like the way that they've extended out Big E's. It's a fraction too long. I preferred it the way it was previously.
I'll tell Kevin.
That really is that is nitpicky of the most nitpicky. But like, yeah, I just preferred it the old way. But you have to get the graphics up now.
But I liked how Woods was taped up from the injury from the Bludgeon Brothers beatdown at Fastlane. And like you said, Rowan started to take out New Day members on outside, and then he gets the hammer. But then the Usos run down, and that causes the DQ. But the Usos and the New Day are arguing in the ring. And they scatter when the Bludgeon Brothers get in, and that sets up that triple threat for Mania, which was announced later on. Noteworthy.
But it's not really noteworthy because we already knew it was coming. So that's not... For me...
You know nothing until it's announced.
For me, that is not a noteworthy thing. Also, I would argue that I would have preferred this to have actually been... And this is going to sound weird to say, I wish this had been set up differently.
Mm.
But it was just—it seems really weird that these three teams have just been sort of feuding for the last few weeks, and then it's random, like, oh, and now they're going to have a match. Like, there was no challenge laid down. There was no Bludgeon Brothers saying, like, we want those belts. It wasn't the New Day saying, like, we want a rematch. It was just... They just announced it.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd have skipped forward in the show, you would have missed that announcement. There was no... Okay, so there was no angle to lead into this match announcement.
I mean, there was. It was the Fastlane angle. And then you have your big angle next week. Hopefully, WWE's track record of go-home shows is not stellar. But I do agree, the belts have taken a back seat here, which I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. After that Fastlane thing, if you'd announced then the day after that we're going to have this triple threat match at WrestleMania, then you could use those 4 weeks to... build up this match, as opposed to we've just been building up to the announcement, and then the announcement just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I just think, again, I've really enjoyed these segments, and out of most things on the card, this is one of the things I'm really looking forward to. I just think this match is going to be absolutely...
Yeah.
This could very well steal the show on WrestleMania. I think this really could steal the show from everyone. I think it's going to be so good.
Asuka and Charlotte had a very good video package after that. Charlotte, of course, not on the show... because she was recovering from gum surgery.
Oof, that sounds rough. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of dental surgery earlier this year, and it was not fun. So, yeah, I really feel for her.
Yeah, but apparently she'll be fine. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
And then we went into, and now here we go, noteworthy. Talking of noteworthy, Dolph Ziggler took on Tyler Breeze.
Yeah, and so this was, I'm going to say, possibly noteworthy thing. I think they're going to be setting up the split up of the Fashion Police.
No, really?
Well, because the story of this match was that it was Tyler Breeze versus Dolph Ziggler.
Mm.
Fandango got up onto the apron to do a dance, and Tyler Breeze told him to get down. And then he just jumped back up and did the dance again, and Tyler Breeze had to say, no, you get down. And then there was a point in the match where Dolph Ziggler rolled to the outside. Tyler Breeze rolled to the outside with him and chased him around the ring. Fandango thought that Dolph was chasing him, so he started running, and all three of them started running. It was a complete comedy match. Good work, Dolph. You've gone from WWE Championship match to joke match with the... but it's fine. And then they would just run around the ring. And then Dango kept continuing to run around the ring, which distracted Tyler Breeze. Mm. And Ziggler got the win off of the back of that. I wonder if this is our first step into a split up of the Fashion Police and we're going to get a Tyler Breeze singles run.
You know, that's not terrible. As much as I love the Fashion Police, they haven't done anything with them since the Fashion Files last year. And we both know how talented they are as singles performers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I love a comedy match.
It was funny.
I really liked the running round the ring spot. And then Fandango kept running and then he got cramp, which I enjoyed a lot. But yeah, like you said, Ziggler has gone from WWE Fastlane main event... And just over a month later, Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
I think it was only 3 weeks ago he was cutting a promo saying, like, I've never had a singles match at WrestleMania, and this is going to be the WrestleMania where I'm going to have a singles match. He'd reportedly signed this big money contract. He was one of the highest paid guys, on the roster. He was going to get this giant singles push. There was even rumors he was going to have a match with Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. And here he is, just an entrant in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which... no one could possibly... The commentators, credit, are trying to do their best to say, like, hey, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, like, that catapults careers. Cesaro is a tag team champion off the back of him winning it 5 years ago. And Big Show is going to go into the Hall of Fame one day. Baron Corbin, he debuted in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and won it. I can't even remember who won it last year. Mojo.
Yes,
Mojo. And then he said that quite
a
bit with the other
Gronk
one.
First. Is he a WWE thing?
Yes, no, yeah, Mojo won it, and that's that's really catapulted him. Who else has won it?
Cesaro, you said, Big Show twice.
Oh, has he won it twice? Corbin,
yes.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Well, my point proven. So yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Dolph. Mm. Feel really bad for him. But I wonder if this is going to be. I'd love to see Tyler Breeze get a serious singles push, because like during this match, I wrote down, I was like, oh yeah. This was Tyler Breeze's first feud when he came up from NXT.
Yeah, wow. Was against Lana.
No, not with Lana, with Summer Rae.
Summer Rae, sorry, I get my blonde.
Because it was Summer Breeze.
Yes. Especially with a draft presumably around the corner, maybe that's where you split the Fashion Police and they can have more substantial singles pushes. The main event was Shinsuke Nakamura versus Shelton Benjamin. It was very short, but I really liked it.
As I said in the SmackDown review, it was just about to get great, and then the finish happened. And I was like, oh, but it's like, you remember you said last week you'd love to see Braun Strowman Cesaro Universal Championship match on a pay per view. Shinsuke Nakamura versus Shelton Benjamin for the WWE Championship. Sign me up, because if they got
it's
given,
it's never gonna happen.
It's never gonna happen. But you give them 20-25 minutes, like, because this match was just about to get so good. But because it's like TV match, you have to cut it a bit short. And I just like, oh, I want to see more of this. Because it was a striking, it was submissions. The ending sequence was really good. Loads of really clever reversals. Like the payday into the armbar was a really nice spot. Like I want to see more of this.
But it's just Nakamura's fighting for the title in 12 days' time at WrestleMania. Shelton Benjamin hasn't been built up as a threat.
Nope.
As much as I would have loved to see a long match here, this was the right match. Nakamura had to dominate and win very quickly because Benjamin isn't that kind. Now is not the time to do a great surprise TV match from someone lower down the card to elevate them. That's when you're not 2 weeks away from your biggest show of the year. Mm-hmm. But the little bits they did do was great. Like you said, the opening exchange I really liked with the mat wrestling and the Northern Lights suplex that Benjamin hit. That was a good near fall.
Yeah.
I reacted to that. I don't know why. I just that sort of, was it a triangle that he had locked in, or was it an armbar?
The armbar and then transitioned into a triangle.
But the best part was what came afterwards, which they finally shifted into the next gear. They must have stalled the car because they went from first to about fourth here. When Nakamura invited AJ into the ring, AJ had previously stopped Chad Gable from interfering in the match, which is kind of what you thought AJ was out there for. That's why Nakamura brought him out, to have him in his corner. But Nakamura tells AJ after the match, I didn't have you down here for that, to protect me. I had you down here so you could see close up how I'm going to beat you. And AJ sort of got emotional, didn't he? He was...
Mm-hmm.
Said, I'm the best. He said, we're going to tear this house down. this is the house that I built. So very confusing construction metaphors there.
Yeah.
But they, Shinsuke pointed out, you're not going to win because you're too emotional. And then he walked off. So cool. And I was like, this is the Nakamura. This is the Nakamura I want to see. He was just, he was a face. He's definitely a face, but he's also a badass in doing this. And it's slightly heelish. And that's, you know, that's a good way to present faces that everyone cheers for. It makes them more three-dimensional. And that bit at the end where Gable and Benjamin attack AJ from behind, they're beating him down. Shinsuke finally comes in to save AJ by beating them both off. Naughty. But then Nakamura sees AJ down and he's like, he starts setting up for the Kinshasa. The crowd get really excited. Nakamura runs up and stops at the last moment and then just pats AJ in the head.
He did it just to show that he can.
Oh!
And then just shouted at him, knee to face.
Yes, that was, and it was such a good moment that the crowd, I heard a bits of the crowd go, knee to face along with Nakamura, like that could be a catchphrase, when it sounded quite stupid a month or two ago when he first did it. I thought this was brilliant, a great way to end the show, and they've finally shifted gears on this feud.
I thought it was a really solid angle. It's about time that this feud moved a little bit somewhere, but I just can't help but feel that this has just been, it's just so flattened off. The appeal of this match is that it's AJ versus Shinsuke Nakamura, as opposed to any of the storyline nonsense that's gone into this. Like, we're all excited for this match because of the two guys, as opposed to any of the build that they have done to it. Like, my interest in this match is exactly the same as it was before I started the show.
Really?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. And again, I don't want to sound like a negative Nigel. It's just that is kind of where I'm sitting on this at the moment. I mean, I gave the show an Ellsworthy.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't think there was anything, as I said, really were like of note, as opposed to aside from Rusev getting added in. I thought this was, not for spoiling my Raw review or my Raw thoughts, more or less the same as Raw, which is we've got loads of great stuff, but we're just saving that all for next week. So this week's show's a bit of a throwaway, but next week is going to be awesome. I've got really high hopes for next week's show.
I disagree. I thought that they really added to the character dynamic of Nakamura and AJ beyond the sort of sportsmanship stuff they've presented in the building months, where Shinsuke's like, I'm cool, I've got your number, and AJ's, I'm angry, I'm emotional.
But they've been doing that for weeks.
But this was the first time they properly showed that through action.
But they've been doing it for weeks through action. Like, so Nakamura, he was very slow to save AJ Styles, and then he got in the ring and then saved him.
Mm.
And then the week after that, AJ was very slow to say, like, oh, you know, I'm just going to do what you did last week. But before he could get in, Nakamura just cleared the ring without him. So Nakamura was like, mate, I don't need you. So they've been doing the same thing for the last 3 weeks.
But that's not the story I just spoke about. I'm speaking about one being cool and collected and the other being emotional and rash.
Yeah, I think that's the same thing.
No, that's just like, I'm going to do the thing you did and then, oh, actually, but that, one's better.
No,
hot-headed character motivation behind AJ helping or not helping Shinsuke, or vice versa.
I think there was. I sort of read that there was.
Mm.
Haha, it's a Raw review looking jacked, man!
Raw kicked off with Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman coming down to the ring to laugh at footage of Brock beating up Roman from last week.
Yeah.
That was good fun.
It was good fun, yeah. Mm.
But Paul Heyman then cut a typically excellent promo about breaking news. Temporary suspension of Roman Reigns has been lifted. More breaking news. He's not here because he's not a man.
Yeah, it was. So this was really funny, actually, because Heyman announces that Roman is no longer suspended and the crowd cheers. And then he announces that he's not there and the crowd cheers. Mm. I'm like, where are you sitting? It's like last week. It's like, where do you sit on Roman this week, crowd? But for me, I was just like, what was the point of the Roman being suspended storyline then? Because they suspended him. He was there last week, and then he was just here again this week, and they just said, the suspension's been lifted.
Because Stone Cold did it, Luke. Stone Cold did it. Because you're also, there's no Vince McMahon here either. He's just been factored out of the story as well. It was just,
oh, yeah.
Just a spot.
I forgot about that.
It was just a spot to make you like Roman Reigns, but it hasn't worked.
It hasn't worked.
it's a shame, but who is that in the crowd as Heyman's saying all this stuff about Roman? It's only Roman Reigns.
Yep.
And does he go straight for a chair or something?
Yeah, I was going to say, the crowd pops when Roman comes down and he grabs a chair, but then Brock just gets out the ring and just levels him with a clothesline before he can even use the chair. And then Reigns pushes Lesnar into the post and then starts hitting him with the chair.
but there was a great spot where Brock was down on one side and Roman Reigns went for the Superman punch off the steel steps, got loads of elevation and air, but Brock caught him in a belly-to-belly and just chucked him over his head. This wasn't the belly-to-belly of suplexes. This was a full-on throw overhead. I thought it was a great beatdown from Brock.
I also really liked Roman subtly selling the beatdown from last week, because he's like hitting him with chairs, but after he did it, he was very staggering when he did it, because he was hospitalized last week where he was on a backboard and things like that. So I thought that was actually a really nice bit of subtle selling from Roman Reigns, even though he probably could have done a bit more. But I thought it was some good subtle selling from him.
And then Roman Reigns was sort of laid out. But by this, in the brawl, Lesnar had thrown the steel steps into the ring. But then Lesnar started to leave. And I thought, those are Chekhov steps. Mm-hmm. You need to use those steps. And lo and behold, Lesnar turns round, gets back into the ring, and gives a brutal-looking F5 to Roman Reigns on those steps.
That looked like it sucked to take.
He's standing alongside the steps, and he throws Roman, so Roman lands gut-first on the edge.
Oh, that looked like it hurt a lot.
That was a good spot.
Great spot. Again, I don't want to sound like a negative Nigel. As I said sort of off mic, I'm going to get absolutely crucified in the comments today for being far too negative, doing big air quotes.
And I said, you build up all that goodwill with the fantasy booking.
And I'm just going to get absolutely slaughtered for this.
It was fine. That's what I thought about your fantasy booking.
If it were me and I was part of this WWE creative team, if I was the person who were doing this, do you know what I wouldn't do? I wouldn't do the spot where Lesnar looks like he's walking away and then goes back to the ring to beat up Roman Moore. Because you know what that does? That gets Lesnar cheered. And if the idea is to get Lesnar booed, which is what I think was meant to start when he was doing all the no-showing stuff, we were trying to get Lesnar booed and get Roman cheered because he is always there. If that was your intention, don't do a spot where Lesnar can easily get cheered by giving the crowd what they want. The crowd chant one more time and then he gives them one more time. He appears like the babyface that people like. If the crowd chant one more time and he just flips them off and walks away, that might get him booed. Yeah. And people might cheer Roman off the back of that. It's a crazy idea, but it might have worked.
Yeah, I agree. You couldn't have done the steel step, but maybe that's even better. If you set up the steel steps, we know as an audience what to expect, but then he just fakes out and doesn't do it.
Yeah, just doesn't
anyway.
Do it.
That would have been great. I just think this whole, now we're 13 days away as of the Raw taping. I think this storyline's a botch. They did all that work to get Brock booed, and it was kind of working, but never really properly worked. And now, as of this week, everyone's back to cheering Brock Lesnar.
It's so weird because they've just changed the story. The story went from Brock not being there, Brock no showing, to being here all the time. I don't understand how we got from point A to point B. I don't think it's worked at all. I think it has been a bit of a swing and a miss.
And the whole leaving WWE, Brock doesn't care about you guys, that's fallen by the wayside for the last 2 weeks in favor of some beatdown spots. And they're different enough. Last one had the arrest and this one had the steel stairs spot, but they are just beatdown spots.
Yeah.
They're beatdown segments. There wasn't really anything that furthered it. So,
well, what they're doing, thing as you said about the Daniel Bryan match. Is like, oh, you want to see the underdog Daniel Bryan, the injured Daniel Bryan, and the injured Shane McMahon trying to overcome these big bullies. The exact same thing here. We're meant to be supporting the under big dog Roman Reigns going up against the bully Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Roman Reigns, he's not at 100%. How can he possibly survive the onslaught of the beast? But, oops, he did. So, that's where we're meant to be going here. Which would work if people cheered Roman.
Well, it's not... It wouldn't even work then, though, because the
whole... It would have worked then.
The whole point of Roman Reigns is that he is not an underdog. That it's inbuilt in his moniker. He is the big dog. So... All these, the underdog story is not the story you tell with Roman. If you're going to push him as a babyface, push him as a badass destroyer.
Mate, did I travel back in time?
So the clocks did go back.
We did go back. It's 2014 all over again.
I know. So it's, hopefully Paul Heyman turns on Brock and sides with Roman. I was willing to see where that storyline was going, but I'm not interested.
Yeah.
So... We're back to begging for that Roman heel turn.
Afraid so. Next, we got Mickie James versus Nia Jax. Mickie coming out to Alexa Bliss's music, which is...
Such a heel.
Such a heel. What a heel that she is now. Nia dominates, and then Mickie's slapped Nia, which that was a mistake, because Nia just started to beat the holy heckins out of her.
Mickie James is good here.
Yeah, I thought it was Mickie James. But I've written here, why don't you just have Jax squash James? Like, I wouldn't have made it so competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have just had her literally just squashing and just like, and staring down Alexa while she's squashing Mickie James.
That would have been good.
Like, that's why Mickie's in this role. Mickie's in this role, so Nia Jax has got someone to destroy in the lead up to her getting her hands on Alexa. So it's weird that they then have give Mickie James quite so much offense in the match.
Yeah. You love a squash.
I love a squash.
To build up someone.
Well, if you're going to give someone a lackey that's there to be beaten, just beat them. Like, you don't need to give them offense.
And it's not like Mickie James is this hot upcoming talent that you need to protect.
No.
Like, she can rest on the laurels of her previous career for a long, long time. The funnest part of this segment was when Nia Jax called Alexa a bitch.
Oh, well, it's the word of the buzzword of the month, really, isn't it? I saw someone sent me this on Twitter. It really made me chuckle. So Lesnar has always called Roman Reigns a bitch because it's Suplex City, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roman's whole thing was just like, Brock Lesnar really is a bitch. And then Paul Heyman, when he was cutting a promo about the Universal Championship, said that was Brock Lesnar's bitch. So it's a bitch versus a bitch over a bitch's bitch.
Yeah.
That's what the Universal Championship match is all about.
We sound so street with all those bitches. What up, bitches?
It's not a great word to use, but WWE love using it.
Ronda Rousey video package was up after that, and this was the other side of what we saw last week with the Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey training stuff. This was Triple H and Stephanie McMahon.
This was my favourite thing on the show.
It was incredible.
So good. Loved this. Mm. You can tell when Triple H is involved in the booking of a feud.
Because NXT's featured.
Because it just feels like an NXT feud. Mm. And I loved this video package. I thought it was so awesome. I thought they came off so great in this. So hateable.
Yes.
But not hateable.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But not hateable in the way that Stephanie usually comes across, which is just like, oh, by the way, I'm just so much better than you. Mm. And I'm just gonna belittle you, Kurt, because you're shorter than I am. This just felt like them sitting there going like, oh, yeah, but of course we're better. And like Stephanie even said, like, this is why we belittle people. This is why I'm always putting people down. It's because I'm Stephanie McMahon. I'm a McMahon. That's what we do. And they just came off like such dicks. And I loved it.
It felt like all the stuff that happens in the ring with Stephanie when she does those promos, that's the big performance. But here in this video package, it was her talking about that behind the scenes almost. And she's saying, but it's true.
Yeah.
Like, that's me. This is me in real life. That's just an exaggerated version of me. I'm still hateable to even behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That's what I got. It was a great heel presentation. I love the fact that it felt more like a sporting matchup with the talking head with Joe DeFranco, their trainer.
Yeah, Joe DeFranco, who's saying that Trips and Stephanie are among the best athletes in the world. They're training harder than any WWE or UFC star. Loved that as a line, because that, again, it feels like the trainer paid off to say that
of
stuff.
Exactly. So in the Wrestling Observer review, they also loved the segment. But they said, "What? Like, come on, they're not better than MMA stars."
You're
being worked. That was meant to make you annoyed.
Yeah.
But it is, I get it, it is sometimes difficult to separate what is the heels saying stuff and what is WWE actually saying to project a certain image. Great montage. I liked the old footage of Kurt and Triple H. Triple H is saying, you know, I've beaten Kurt loads of times before.
Oh, Steph had the money line in this. I think it was Steph anyway, which was just like, Kurt losing to Triple H is another day at the office.
Yeah.
but Ronda being beaten by an executive, that's embarrassing. Oh, like, it was so good. And like, and she just ends up with like, I'm a McMahon. That means Ronda works for me.
Yeah.
I just thought this was so good.
I want to see them get their asses kicked
at
WrestleMania.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see Stephanie crying, tapping out in the armbar.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about Ronda, I suppose, later on. But I wonder if this is going to be one of those matches where like all of the build has been really... not all of the build. These bits of the build have been really good, but... What will the match end up being like?
It'll be overbooked to all hell.
Yeah,
Triple H will be able to cover.
Exactly, they'll do the majority. Well, I mean, Triple H is going to do the majority of the lifting because Kurt's hardly at 100% himself in ring. So, yeah, Triple H was doing a lot of heavy lifting tonight on that match.
Next up, we had the Cruiserweights.
At 205 Live spotting.
Yeah, being back on Raw for the first time since the Royal Rumble, which is the first... So this is the first Triple H presentation of 205 Live on Raw. And it apparently was different. I didn't see much in it.
This was not the Triple H 205 Live. Mm. This was the Cruiserweights on Raw... being the Cruiserweights on Raw that we saw for the majority of last year. This was not the Triple H 205 Live.
Well, apparently it was more, even though it was a short match, it was a tag match between Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali against Drew Gulak and TJP. They didn't try and work like rest holds and yada, yada, yada. They did have a more spot-filled match, which is how you should use the Cruiserweights and their style of wrestling. But I don't know, maybe it's just because I saw it, I'm still conditioned, I did kind of phase out.
The crowd did as well. Yeah. The crowd were, which as soon as they saw Cruiserweights come out, they were like, nah, cool, I can just zone out for a little bit here. Mm. But apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but there was a four-way, I think, on 205 Live this week, which it was like Tozawa, Mark Andrews, Buddy Murphy, and someone else. Mm. I apologize, I haven't actually watched the match yet, but I've seen some of it in GIF form. There are some incredible spots in that, like really, really, like sort of the stuff that made me go like, wow, I need to check that out. Mm. Like if you put maybe that match on here, would have been something a little bit different.
But we did have, I mean, was this Drake Maverick? Was this him making his Raw debut?
No, he's been on Raw previously.
Okay, because he was on commentary for the match. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the week after he debuted, he was on Raw.
What, to do what?
To commentate on a Cruiserweight match.
There haven't been any Cruiserweights since...
I might be wrong, okay. But I'm almost certain Drake Maverick has previously been on Raw. To
vote in the poll above our head. Trying to get more polls in for the algorithms.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that he has been on Raw previously to commentate on another 205 Live match.
I'm not wedded to have an argument over this. But no. I will let that observation float out into the ether. I'll just be shot down by either you.
I'll just let the YouTube comments tell you you're wrong.
Comments no more.
Yeah.
Mustafa Ali hit the reverse 450 splash for the win. What a move.
What a maneuver.
Alexander and Mustafa Ali, of course, will be the main, not the main event of WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, they wish.
Turn around. main event of the pre-show, maybe.
Maybe.
That they're culminating their tournament final.
And let's be honest, it's opening the pre-show, let's be honest.
Miz TV next. In a segment that a lot of people say was one of the best things about Raw, I thought, to steal a phrase, it was fine.
Yeah, I thought it was... I mean, my first note here is because it was Miz TV with Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. My note here is like, haven't we seen this before? Like, haven't they already done a Miz TV with Balor and Rollins?
You know, so when we make notes for Raw, I always... Okay, we got Miz TV. And I just automatically write, the guest is Miz. Because he's done that so many times, I think I'm safer putting that down. But yeah, Seth, has it been both of them? I think it might have been Finn Balor was the guest, but Seth Rollins came down.
Right.
I can't remember. It did seem a bit repetitive from previous weeks, though.
Yeah, but
because they're stuck in that loop where they only face each other.
Yes, but they shook it up a little bit here because previously it's always been about Miz trying to play mind games with Balor and trying to get them to work against each other. Here, he actually was getting them to work together, but it was all a ruse. He was like shouting down Bowen's Axel.
Curtis Axel.
Curtis Axel, yeah. So Bo and Axel were being like shouted down, and then Rollins came down because Bo called him a...
phony A-lister who can't fight.
That was it, yeah. And then Rollins comes down and be like, oh no, I heard him fine. And then it all ended up being that it looked like that the Mistourage were going to turn on the Miz, but then they just attacked Balor and Rollins. And then you got Corey Graves kind of like, genius, what a genius move. But I was just like, huh. Like, I believe you said that the Wrestling Observer said that no one bought into the Mistourage turning on the Miz. But actually, I kind of did. Like, I didn't think that this was all mind games and stuff. But then when the swerve happened, I was like, oh, okay. Doesn't make a whole mess of sense. And then it was like, oh, it's mind games. It was all one big plan. I was like, oh, all right, cool.
Cool. I mean, they could have just beaten them down anyway. Don't get why you needed to draw it out.
I mean, because this segment went, I'd say conservatively 45 minutes. But it probably would have been shorter.
Yeah, it's just... It wasn't like what a devious plan.
What a swerve!
Really had a unique thing come out of it. No, it was just it was another way of doing a beatdown.
Yeah.
So I've seen that quite a few times. But a lot of people liked it. I really did like the line. Bo Dallas's line was good with the phony A-lister who can't fight. But then when Miz was rolling off how he's going to be the greatest champion, better than an Intercontinental champion, better than Randy Savage, better than Shawn Michaels, better than Mr. Perfect. And then the crowd, like, cottoned on before I did. They all went, ooh, and Curtis Axel turns around like that, because, of course, Mr. Perfect was his father. And Miz then immediately started to backtrack. And then I thought, they are doing the turn. They're breaking up Miz from these two guys. And not the worst time to do it. You can move people around in the shake-up after, or the draft after WrestleMania. I don't want to call it a superstar shake-up anymore. It's a stupid phrase. For the draft. And, you know, that sort of makes Miz a bit more vulnerable going into the Mania match.
Yeah, it was fine.
Mm, it was, yeah, I agree with you for once. It was fine.
For once.
But it was all a ruse. The Miztourage attacked Rollins and Balor. Galanderson ran down, but they were beaten off as well. But then Finn Balor posed with the belt while smiling over Seth. So Finn actually clobbered Seth at the end.
Yes, yeah, he did.
It was fine. Yeah, it's going to be Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor next week, which is pretty damn mouthwatering.
I was going to say, well, they had that match a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? Which was really great.
Then we got a generic Kane promo.
I've written here, it was spooky.
Red lighting in the background said stuff like John Cena is going to hell. He didn't get any of the words. This I would have liked, like, little fire emoji, little skull emoji.
That's what this needed.
Yeah.
It was like emojis.
It's not going to make it worse. It's not going to make it any less boring.
That's just, that's
like, I could get angry about
that's it. That's reserved just for SmackDown, mate.
Do you think Vince, you know, because he's very protective over the Kane character, is like, no, Kevin Dunn, no emojis on Kane.
For a second, I thought you were going to say he's so protective over Raw. He's like, well, don't do that stupid stuff over here. This is a quality show. Mm. I like this one.
Then we had Asuka beating Jamie Frost, who is a local wrestler. Apparently she's a manager on the indie scene. I read somewhere that this was her debut match anywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it was, because she was a manager on the indies. I don't know how true that is, but she was interviewed before the match by Charlie Caruso. I thought she was very good.
Yeah.
I quite like Jamie Frost.
Yeah, and if this is her first match, you need to take the one bump, because this is how you do it, mate. Big kick to the face. 1, 2, 3.
She got a few strikes in on Asuka first. That's what I like even more.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh, crap.
I've made a terrible error.
She wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Then we had a bit of a Ultimate Deletion recap. And Corey Graves took Michael Cole to task for calling it obnoxious.
Totally turning this into an angle. Mm. This is 100% an angle now. And I'm wondering whether this was all an angle from the start. Cole calling... Because Cole... Last week was just like, I've got to apologise for this. It's obnoxious. It's different. I don't think this is very good. Some people say it's Cole. I thought it was Cole. Some people are saying it's Vince McMahon, just feeding lines to him. But this week, Michael Cole was turning it up. It's because people got so wound up by it last week. Cole went, like, he reverted back to his 2011 heel Michael Cole bullcrap, where he was just the worst thing about WWE for the longest period of time. And he was saying things purposefully to annoy people who were annoyed about it last week, myself included, where he was just like, oh, it's obnoxious. He's named a boat. That's stupid. Do you know what else is stupid? This whole thing is stupid. Matt's dumb. The whole thing was just Michael Cole turning up his obnoxious self up to 11 to turn this whole thing into an angle. That's fine with me.
It's weird, isn't it? It definitely makes me hate him, but it just makes me want him to go away. Like, I don't want to see a match. I would like to see Michael Cole in an Ultimate Deletion style match, with the end result being Michael Cole is deleted from WWE programming. I don't enjoy his voice.
Oh,
or anything.
No, wouldn't it be great if he got thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation and then came out as like 1999?
JR.
No, JR. It comes out as like 1999 Michael Cole when he had the goatee and the frosted tips in his hair.
That would be good. When he was a rent boy. Oh, no, that's Josh.
That was Josh Matthews.
Josh Matthews was the rent boy.
Oh, Josh Matthews. No, we had 2004.
Yeah,
crikey.
This was unpleasant overall. I didn't like it. Even if I am being worked, it's like worked to the extent where I just don't want to see it. So not a success, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I happen to believe this is all a Vince McMahon thing. I don't think Michael Cole actually has a personality. Promo afterwards had Matt Hardy declaring himself in the Humongous Wonder number 8 Memorial Battle Royal.
I've got to say, I did laugh at Cole at the end here. Because because Matt Hardy says, like, it'll be wonderful, and then does his delete. And it cuts back, and Michael Cole just goes, that was obnoxious! Mm. And I genuinely laughed. It did make me chuckle.
Maybe I am being worked, because, I mean, Michael Cole is so obnoxious.
Oh, he's completely obnoxious, yeah.
I don't feel like he has that level of self-reflexivity. Or WWE, again, yeah. I'm not attacking Michael Cole, I'm attacking WWE's presentation of Michael Cole.
I think this is very much a pot kettle black situation, and Michael Cole doesn't realise that.
Next up, we had the huge climax of an 18-month storyline. Finally, Sasha Banks and Bayley, the best friends forever, the long-running potential feud, collided in a backstage segment.
Do you know what's so funny about this?
Yes.
So a lot, like, people sent me this message being like, oh, that just conclude, like, all of this, this all this build, and it ended in a backstage segment. You've just had that reaction then. I haven't listened to Wrestling Observer Radio, but I imagine they probably had similar reactions, being like, oh my god, all of this work, and you just ended it here. Do you know what my reaction was? That's not the culmination.
Yes.
Because I was like, this can't be the culmination, because it's so pants. Mm. Like, this, if this is the culmination, this is the culmination, I'm like, at the end of it, I didn't go like, wow, the storyline has finally come to an end. That was a Sasha Banks heel turn. If next week it was like, that was the heel turn, I'm going to be like, what? No, it wasn't. Like, because it didn't feel like anything happened.
It's just setting up almost babyface tension heading into... No one is the clear heel
this
here.
This was not a heel turn. Yeah. This can't have been a heel turn.
It wasn't a heel turn, but it was when Banks and Bayley finally overflowed outside the confines of a match to beat each other up. So what happened was they're standing by some lockers, which did look like it was a high school in America. And I expected one of them to be opened, and there was, like, you know, Finn Balor posters inside, some hearts and sticky notes. And they're sort of going back and forth. Banks says, well, don't forget, I'm a four-time champion. And Bayley had a killer line. Yeah, but how long did you keep those?
Yeah.
Referring to Sasha Banks, is like, she's never been champion for longer than a month. Never successfully defended a title.
Which just makes those four championship reigns seem really rubbish.
And they brawled around the backstage area. Sara Del Rey turned up. Amongst all the referees, there was a Sara Del Rey who is the sort of women's trainer down in NXT, largely credited for the Charlotte Banks, Lynch and Bayley quartet coming up. And why submissions are so important in WWE women's wrestling is also largely down to her, apparently. And this was, yeah, like you said, I agree, it's not the big turn, but it's something else to set up them fighting in the Battle Royal, and maybe it's a program that will happen after Mania.
Yeah, I think so. It has to happen after Mania. There's no space. There's 14 matches on the WrestleMania card. There's no more room for a 15th.
And Kid Rock's going to have a 20-minute concert, well, probably.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, that up.
If WrestleMania 25 is anything to go by, I hope it's 50 minutes.
But this was much better acting here, I thought, than it would have been in an in-ring promo.
I've written here, this had less heat than you'd think.
Yeah.
Because
it's past it.
Because they cut back to the crowd. The crowd just didn't react to it at all. Yeah, okay. Well, next up, we had Braun versus Sheamus.
Yes.
So Bar came out and they said that Braun's secret weapon is the element of surprise. And they want to know who's Braun's partner is right now. Braun says that he will tell them who the partner is if he gets in the ring and beats him, which I thought was a great line. He was like, oh, I'll tell you who it is, but you've got to get in here first and get these hands. That was a great line. But Sheamus said, Sheamus goes, that doesn't make any sense. Why would I do that? That was awesome.
I quite enjoyed this as a big heavyweight match. Yeah. Two big guys just going at it.
Loved it.
Like two big guys going at it in a wrestling match.
Yeah.
And we still don't know who the partner is because Sheamus lost. So, yeah. Don't know. Mystery.
Well, yeah, but there's a lot of people. Some people think it might be Big Show. If it's Big Show, then that would be such a...
Well, it wouldn't make sense, seeing that he was the guy whose kayfabe retired him.
Yeah. And also, just like, that would be such a lackluster announcement. Big Cass doesn't seem like it would be a particularly great announcement either. I think the only person that really makes sense is Ellsworth.
Or Elias.
Or Elias,
but
yeah.
But like, he seems to be doing his own thing as well.
Yeah.
Then we had Ronda Rousey's in-ring segment, which was promoted all the way through Raw, one probably the biggest promoted segment. And Kurt comes out first, and I thought, God, is this the start of Raw again? Because I'm just so conditioned to seeing Kurt recap stuff that happened the previous week. And Ronda comes out. She looks like she's got an eye condition.
Well,
so are we going to talk about this makeup situation?
Do we have to?
Ronda Rousey, she looks silly.
Is it a thing?
Hmm.
Oh, okay. I mean, she wears eyeshadow.
She wears red eyeshadow, a lot of it. It looks like she's been crying or she's been hit in the face. I think she looks rather silly.
Well, she wears eyeshadow. Like that's all I can really comment on it.
And she, like, it would be better if she... I mean, maybe I'm only noticing this stuff because her promo delivery is not great.
Do you know what it is? WWE need to stop treating her like a celebrity.
Mm.
Like, that's what this really needs. They need to start treating her like she's an active member of the roster, that she is one of their people, because she comes out, she gets this, like, almost celebrity star. It's like Jay Leno when he was in WCW, or it's like, or Dennis Rodman, because she just comes out glad-handing people. So, I was thinking about this morning while I was in the shower. I was thinking about this segment because it's kind of been playing on my mind a little bit. The whole Ronda Rousey thing has been playing on my mind a little bit because I'm trying to be positive about it. I've tried to be positive from the get-go. But segments like this and the segment last week with Dana Brooke and some...
It wasn't aired, though.
It wasn't aired, but, you know, a lot of people saw it. It kind of keeps sort of dragging me down. And I think... Okay, so here's the thing. I think her character is that she is a celebrity who is happy to be there. So she comes down, she glad hands. When she's cutting her promos, they are not good because her character is, I'm not very good at this because I'm just a celebrity. Mm. But then when people are trying to attack her, that's when you get the real Ronda Rousey.
Okay.
And then Ronda Rousey kind of switches mode. She gets the scowl on her face. She starts beating people up. And then she started like trying to like lock in the armbar on Rose or Deville. I can't remember which one it was now. It was Rose. And kind of was like, whoa, don't do this now. Like, get off her. And then, like, she stood up and she kind of, like, has to sort of, like... It's almost like the Hulk.
Hmm.
You know, she is Bruce Banner until you attack her and then she becomes the Hulk. I think that's her character. If that is her character, then it does make sense. If not, then I don't know what they're doing.
That is very... That's a really good take on it, I think. Yeah, but it's not working.
It's not... Don't get me wrong. It is not working.
But I think that's what they're thinking.
I think that's what they're doing. But I don't know. I just don't know anymore.
They actually gave her some pretty decent lines by WWE standards. I really like the trust fund tough.
Yeah.
Personal trainer tough. You know, talking about Stephanie, she's not really...
But it's all like it's lost in delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
It's lost in delivery and timing. She hasn't got that WWE speak of just like, here is where you hit the beat. Here is when you say this line. It's just feels like words.
She rushes and takes forever at the same time.
Yeah.
And whereas everyone else... Oh, my God. Some confetti. whereas everyone else kind of feels like they've got a... It's almost like she's not holding the mic in the right place.
Yeah, it's not...
Sounds a bit quiet.
Yeah, she's not holding it close enough to her mouth. Because... So someone's got in touch with me on Twitter to kind of talk about this because he really didn't like this segment because he felt that it's almost buried Paige a little bit because she was the real star. She was getting all the heat and Ronda was doing nothing with it. My sort of response to this is like, with Ronda, what they need is time, but time is the last thing that they have no time. Like it's the least amount of stuff that they have. She needs like so much time and energy kind of put in this to make sure her promos are right, make sure she's got kind of good in ring, making sure that when she does these planned choreographed spots, that they look natural and they don't look choreographed. But time isn't on their side at the moment because we're a week out from Sunday from WrestleMania. WrestleMania is a week Sunday. And it just does not feel like Ronda is at that right level yet for a big WrestleMania match.
Do you know the way around that? Don't book her to talk. Don't book her to do that blocking spot.
Do we?
Because the throws and the armbar look great.
Yes. And do you know what? Also great last week when she was just sat down and she was just doing that. That was such a great... Like, I love that promo package. And she looks great when they do the promo packages where she looks like a badass when she's doing her training and stuff. That all works great. It's when these in-ring segments are the stuff that aren't helping her. Maybe what she needs to do is do them on house shows. Mm. Maybe just practice them on house shows. Just have her go out there, just do it in front of a live crowd so she can kind of get used to it. Don't do it on Raw.
Yeah.
That might be a way around it.
I think that would be a great way around it. Of course, you've got the problem of of mobile phones and this stuff getting out. But I think that would be better than what you're doing now. Yeah. And like you said, it would give her the live experience.
Yeah.
Paige came out to interrupt this and said, you know, why don't you join Absolution? And this transitioned into Sonya Deville going to attack Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey Jedi blocked it in slow motion. Looked terrible. Yeah. It was the same spot as the Dana Brooke one last week. In fact, it was the exact same spot because it then went into the judo throw over her head, which Mandy Rose was meant to land on Sonya Deville, but Sonya was out of position.
Yeah.
So that didn't look
brilliant. That doesn't help either.
But that's not Rousey's fault.
No. And as I've written here, like, this is when Ronda looks great. Mm. This is when she looks awesome, when she's throwing. And Absolution was kind of like the perfect people to do this with because they have no momentum at the moment. So you can just kind of feed her these people to just throw around and look better than, because she's the star, so to speak. So, like, I don't mind that at all. Although Paige called her baby girl 30 or 40 times. Like, she just kept saying it. It's almost like Paige is doing that because she doesn't have a character now. She's just, like, ad-libbing these lines in. Like, if I keep calling her baby girl, maybe that will be my character. Mm. That's what my character is now. Because WWE aren't doing anything for me.
When Ronda did go into meme mode, I love the facials. Like, she looks like a different person. Like, she's just become Frankenstein. And when she had the armbar... Frankenstein's monster, my apologies. Had the armbar locked in. That looked great as well. And it's McMahon and Triple H having a face-off against Ronda and Kurt next week.
Yeah, which should be...
The go-home angle.
Go-home angle.
Maybe that will go on last. No, Undertaker will return, won't he? That will be last.
Yeah. One of my favourite things I've ever seen on the internet was someone had defaced a copy of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Because at the end of it, when the Prometheus is going off, and it's just like... And at the end of it, they're just like written in pencil. It was like, and from afar, you could just hear him shout, "I don't mind if you call me Frankenstein."
Nice. Gallanderson beat Miz Taraj next in... I mean, the crowd were dead.
Yeah.
Luke Gallows did his best. And then... Oh, but the commentary said that Gallanderson really looked like they're building themselves up for tag title contention.
Hmm.
So maybe that's a post-WrestleMania direction for them.
There was also... Like, when they hit the Magic Killer and won, the lights dimmed and then came back up. It was like... It felt like the lights turned off in the arena and then turned back on. And then, I've written here... Was that a giveaway that The Undertaker is showing up tonight? And then, because I'd forgotten that happened, I just remembered, I was like, maybe that was all a work.
Whoa.
Maybe they did that to make you stick around because you think that The Undertaker is going to show up. Hey.
Ingenious.
Stranger things have happened.
Then we had Elias taking on Rhino. Elias himself, I mean, he's only been gone a week or two, but God, I missed him. He was great.
He's very good at what he does.
Yeah, he said he'd sold out Madison Square Garden last week. So coming to Cleveland is a huge disappointment. and he's got this really good bit that he's worked into his act now, where he'll sing the song about how bad your hometown is. Then he'll say, you know, how bad your the Cleveland Browns are. And then he stops playing. And as not part of the song, he goes, "Seriously, how bad are the Browns?" And then he starts playing again. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I forgot Rhino had entrance music.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened. And Elias quickly won, and then he beat up Heath Slater afterwards.
Yeah.
So nothing really there.
It really does feel like if he's not Braun's partner, he's Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Like, we'll find out next week, obviously, but yeah.
Or maybe we'll find out at WrestleMania.
Not if he announces himself for the Battle Royal next week. So, yeah, I don't. If he doesn't announce himself for the Battle Royal next week, then, yeah, he very well could be the partner.
The main event was John Cena versus Kane in a no DQ match. We had a Cena Undertaker video package before this, and then Cena came out with a towel that had Ellen DeGeneres' face on, and he said, "Be nice to people." I don't know what that meant.
We don't live in America. Mm. We don't get the Ellen DeGeneres show. So maybe people can let us know what it is. I mean, we have Google, so I suppose we could Google it. But, like, I don't care enough to know. So, I mean, you can let us know. But it's, yeah, I don't care enough to know.
But he said be nice to people. And then he's really nasty to a retired man who gave a hip to the business. So, I don't know. This Cena versus Kane match, I've seen a lot of people criticise it for being slow motion and not very well, not like who wants to see Cena and Kane in 2018. I actually didn't mind it.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Because I thought the no DQ stuff was sort of covered for that. Yeah. I like Cena doing the throat slit and taunting The Undertaker using the choke slam spot.
Choke slam was cool. That was a good spot.
Sit up was great as well. And the crowd really noticed those bits. Cena's very good at, you know, he deployed those spots, really working the crowd well. And me, watching at home. And, of course, you had the looming spectre of a potential Undertaker return at the end of it. But that isn't what happened. John Cena beats Kane, and then he gets up and he's like, well, do something then. Do something. And there's nothing.
And he's like, it's really pleading. Like, at one point, he's like, just do something. And then just like throws the mic down. Like, for God's sake. And it was a real, like, passionate, just do something.
Yeah.
And I really like this John Cena. John Cena is so... And he keeps saying, like, if I don't get this match, I'll go as a fan and that will be great. But that's not what I want. That's not what these people want. They want to see this match. So just do something. Mm. It's like, it's a desperate John Cena. And we've had our issues. We kind of criticized this. Like, I have no path for WrestleMania. We're like, of course you do. You're John Cena.
Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He will just declare.
It's an option, mate. Yeah. Like, just go and do it. So, you know, we've had these issues for it. But I actually really like that he's had now this... like almost 4 month build of him being like, I need to have something for WrestleMania. He's now 1 week out from, or 2 weeks out from, less than 2 weeks out, and now he's like, I need this so badly. Do something. I like this.
Yeah.
I really am a fan of this.
I really agree. And although Taker didn't appear here, which some people were disappointed about, not having him appear here is going to make next week, where I presume he's going to show up, seems so huge. And when they finally get that scene, the Taker stare down. We're watching WrestleMania 25 at the moment, and the Shawn Michaels Undertaker feud, and how great that build was. And it's just, I feel like it's a similar thing. The match quality probably won't be as good, because this is nearly 10 years later for Taker, and wrestling John Cena rather than Shawn Michaels. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then Cena finishes the show with one of the most... unsettling expressions I've ever seen him do, which was his version of the rolling eyes.
I was surprised when I saw that image that I didn't get sent it more on Twitter. I thought that would be screen capped aplenty and sent across to me.
It's meme-erific.
It is very meme-erific.
I mean, you've already kind of... No, you've said you didn't enjoy either of them, really.
But I'm going to go Raw, though.
Are you really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Ronda Rousey video. Well, the Triple H Stephanie video package. And I quite like the Cena stuff with Kane.
That 5-minute video package was better than Rusev getting added, the Daniel Bryan promo, and the AJ Styles Shinsuke Nakamura angle.
I don't know. SmackDown just left me cold. But when you say it like that, it does seem very silly.
And, I mean, talking noteworthy... And the triple threat match was finally confirmed.
Again, it makes it sound very silly,
but
like
Breeze is going on a singles run.
Well, now you said that. Now we're on to SmackDown. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I think SmackDown was the better show, but at the end of it, I was like, meh. At the end of Raw, though, I was also similarly meh. Like neither show really did anything for me. But it was when we were kind of recapping now, I suddenly realized how much I really enjoyed that Triple H video package, how much I really enjoyed the John Cena stuff, how much I really enjoyed other parts of Raw. But, like, so, I don't know, but then there was similarly, there were other parts of SmackDown that I really enjoyed. I just didn't think it was a particularly great week for either show. So, I'll just say SmackDown because you've talked me into it.
Yes. I thought Raw was sort of just, it didn't do anything. Nothing progressed. Whereas I felt like SmackDown, nothing much really progressed, but it did it a lot more excitingly and more engaging for me. So I'm choosing SmackDown. But overall, I think... wrestling, in-ring wrestling, was ignored this week. I missed a good match. I felt that way too many talking segments, way too many video packages.
Maybe that's why SmackDown didn't do much for me this week. Is because usually on SmackDown you tend to get like a really good match. On Raw in particular, you tend to get a really good match as well. And maybe that's why I've just felt a bit cold on both shows. It just felt like both shows were in autopilot before we get to it. And as I've said before in SmackDown reviews, if I feel like I could have missed a week of TV, then that show has not done its job effectively. And I really do feel like I could have missed this week's SmackDown and tuned in next week and been in the exact same position I was 2 weeks previous.
Well, controversial. You wouldn't know three new matches.
The internet exists. I do genuinely think I'm going to get murderized in the comments today. It's just
a bit of a negative.
Yeah, I just everyone's going to be like, oh, this is why I hate Luke. He's just so negative about things. Even though there was stuff I really praised on the show. It's just that I think that they're saving all the good stuff for next week. And people in YouTube, they just don't see that bit. They don't see...
It's their problem, isn't it?
It is their problem, really. Yes. When I think about it, it is really their issue rather than mine.
Do you ever go back and watch yourself? Because, of course, when we're experiencing this through our eyes as we record it. Mm. I'm sure it's a completely different beast when you watch it back.
God, if I listen to myself, I'm like, God, he's a whiny prick. Yeah, like, why? Yeah. Oh, just get rid of him.
See, that's
hashtag,
why...
Hashtag fire Luke.
Super Luke. It was all higher Luke for creative.
I know.
As of Monday, after that fantasy booking warfare success.
I got too much praise. I'm like, I've got to put a big stuff on this.
Self-sabotage.
I've got to sabotage this. Mm. Can't be having too many people like me. I need to... Well, do you know what? Ultimate Deletion was proper stupid. I thought it was absolutely awful.
Daniel Bryan, I wish he never came back. Luke heel turn, mic drop, or headset drop, whatever you want to do.
Whatever you want to do. Yeah. Can we get a lot of that? Like, oh, I think Luke was playing the heel in this episode, or like, I think Luke needs a heel turn. I don't know what that really means.
I think it's off the very successful What Culture Wrestling days, where they would run storylines through their predictions, and you know, maybe Jack would turn heel, or Blompier would turn heel.
But what did that entail?
It would involve people, because you had two factions, if I'm recalling this correctly, which was BX, which is like DX for Blompier, and there was Pachiti Club, and then people would jump sides, and that's how, and there were various storylines played through that.
But how did that actually work in a video? Like, how did Blompier, what was Blompier's predictions, how were they different when he was a heel, when he was a face?
Oh, I was only a casual viewer of that. I couldn't tell you.
That's what I sort of found really interesting, because everyone's like, oh, you should turn heel. And I'm like, what would I do?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm not playing a character here. I'm just telling you what I think of something.
Maybe just at the end of your, you know, sign off the news videos with, go yourself, San Diego.
Or just end it with like, oh, and your local sports team's rubbish.
Yeah. Have a long list of sports teams. By the way, this week... Green Bay really sucks.
The San Diego Chargers are awful and haven't won a Super Bowl in forever.
Yeah.
Boo, 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 boo.
Who wants to walk with Owen? Woo. Yeah. That would spell.
It would do.
Kind of.
That's good. Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa.
What a heel turn.
Should we get into some iTunes reviews?
Let's do it, because our intro was quite long. Upwards of 10 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and this was... It always happens when we really need to get out of here so we can record the WrestleMania 25 podcast.
Bloody hell, it's 10 to 4. You've got a call very soon.
Business call in 8 minutes. I'm going to just transition from Fun Ollie, wacky Fun Ollie, to give me the dividends and sell those stocks.
And it's a proper business call today as well. It's not like your usual business calls that are just like, I want a t-shirt.
No, it's more, how can we avoid tax, man? the Silent Patreon writes, top notch. One of my favourite wrestling podcasts. Yeah, sure, they can talk their personal lives a bit, but personally, I enjoy that.
Me too.
This and other podcasts, which I will not name, opposite of coming out SmackDown. Opposite of coming out SmackDown.
You got there in the end.
Oh, I like them. Yeah. But I digress. They're funny, entertaining, and not afraid to make fun of themselves.
Thanks, Silent Patreon.
Thank you, Silent Patreon. I hope that means they do donate on Patreon.
They just don't want they don't want the plaudits.
And from the J. Mull Goat, greatest of all time, he writes, even though this is a 5-star review, oh no! Ollie doesn't like the classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I am heartbroken. Heartbroken emoji. Still love the show, though, but I hope you get it together. Lol.
Thanks, J-Mal.
Thanks, J-Mal Goat.
The stats from you not liking the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. One of the greatest movies ever made. I was a top 10 of all time, I would argue.
Is it actually in your top 10 of all time?
100%. Like, what else would go in that top 10? Like, above the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
That's a vague question. Like, how many movies do you want me to give you?
I mean, name one that might be better than it.
Pulp Fiction.
No.
The Godfather.
No.
Which you still haven't seen. Rocky.
Rocky might.
The entire oeuvre of Jean-Luc Godard.
No.
L'Atelon, the 1934... movie by Jean Vigo before he sadly passed away to tuberculosis.
You can see why people loved us doing movie podcasts.
It's a good clash.
Exactly. You're there with your Jean-Luc Godard. I'm wearing a Turbo Kid t-shirt. Mm. We just, you know, it's very different ends of the movie spectrum.
What about, okay, I'm going to speak to you in a reference point you might connect with.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Is
better than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, yeah.
Batman Begins.
No.
Avengers
is.
Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War. Yeah.
Okay, right. Let's see if it really is in the top 10.
Yeah, but no. But I think this is a different thing, though, because, like, yes.
Because top 10 isn't actually a number.
It's a state of mind. But, like, top 10 favourite movies. Like, Civil War is a better movie, mm-hmm. but would that be my top 10 films of all time? I don't think it would be, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1990 would be. See, it's very different. There's a very different thing there.
Okay.
Same as, I don't think Guardians of the Galaxy would be my top 10 films of all time.
It's weird. I think there should almost be, like, top 10 films of all time do need to come with caveats, like, top 10 films I still feel emotionally connected to from my childhood.
Yeah.
That's where the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were going
and then,
for you.
And the 1986 Transformers animated movie, yeah.
Mine would have The Mask and Men in Black.
And Godzilla.
The 97. Well, maybe not that one. I'm sure there's more. Oh, like, man. Goonies would be in there ahead
well,
of that.
Well, yeah, Goonies. My wife didn't see the Goonies until her 20s.
Did she? Was it still as good for her?
No, she thought it was fine.
Yeah,
because
it was fine.
You don't have that emotional attachment to it, I suppose. You don't have that Spielbergian Richard Donner magic that came with watching that as a child.
Speaking of, Ready Player One
this
weekend.
I'm someone who's a big fan of the book, so I'm actually like start listening to the audiobook again today so I can kind of get myself all prepped for it.
I invited my friends to go and sit, you as well, but my larger group of friends as well, to go to the cinema on Saturday to see it. And no one replied for like 2 days. And then Mario replied today, the big WhatsApp group thread, and he replied saying, is that still out in the cinemas? And I read back my previous text, and I keep doing this. I'd asked everyone if they wanted to see Ender's Game this weekend.
Oh, nice one.
I think Ready Player One, and what comes out of my mouth is Ender's Game.
That Harrison Ford movie.
Exactly, yeah. The what? The Ava Butterfield botched 2013, maybe?
Yeah, no one could really see that movie, did they?
I didn't mind it. I've watched it since. Anyway, that's all we've got time for in today's show. We will be back with a news and sort of mailbag episode on Saturday. And, yeah.
We'll see you then. I love you, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.